Hello and welcome to the Kids Media Club podcast. I'm Andy Williams, and in today's episode, we've got a slight change to the schedule. We're going to bring you the highlights and takeaways from some of our recent episodes. Coming up, we'll have Joe and Emily sharing their top picks and key insights from some of the conversations with our very special guests. Take a listen.
The clip that I've chosen from our chat with Simon Pullman is regarding really how young people discover new content. A big chunk of the chat was about content that's new to me, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it is new content. We spoke about how younger generations trust the algorithm to know them and to know the kind of content that they might like and how it surfaces it to them. But even then, how do they then validate those recommendations? And then we got on to speaking about how influencers then supplement that. Their recommendations, what games they're playing, what content they're watching, is another way that young people find content that is new to them. And it's a really interesting thing to think about. So here's Simon.
All that algorithmic recommendation stuff, I just completely ignore generally. But it does mean that you know it goes to discovery, and that's it. I mean, TikTok is clearly leagues ahead in terms of sophistication. But then the other piece around this is something really interesting, which is something I've been learning a lot about in the last 6 months, which is just the power of quote creators and influencers. And I think this has come out of the gaming space where they are just enormously powerful in sort of almost anointing new hits. Right. But I think it's starting to happen a little bit in other media as well. BookTok.
Yeah. And, BookTok is huge. And, I use BookTok a lot for learning about book recommendations. But again, are we talking about, because we know that younger audiences and younger demographics, they do trust the algorithm to an extent to serve them something that they know that they'll like. And TikTok is the master at doing that. But now, TikTok is one of the great discovery levers for Roblox that has the same problem as Netflix. You go onto the Roblox homepage and you screen a lot out. But actually, if you've been on TikTok and you've seen gameplay on TikTok, you'll go and seek that out on Roblox. Are those influencers then and creators becoming a proxy for that algorithm? As in, if they're playing it and they're recommending it, then young people are going to go, okay, I'm in. I trust that now. It comes down to this kind of recommendation, doesn't it?
Oh, the trust piece, I think absolutely. And you just have to look at the money that's sort of now invested in using those as a marketing tool. I mean, again, it's generationally, it's a little bit foreign to me because I would go to YouTube and look at gameplay just to kind of get a taste as to what the mechanic is like. I would never think, okay, this is my favorite creator. Let's watch what they're playing, sit and watch them play for 3 hours and then maybe buy the game and jump in myself. But for something like Helldivers 2, which has been a phenomenon this year, I think it's a combination of it became popular with creators. They did a very smart job in terms of how they rolled it out and sort of the marketing. But then also there's something to the content that the content itself is almost very viral / cinematic / moments. So if you catch a moment from that, you're like, oh, that seems fun. That seems cool. But that's absolutely the way. I am aware of companies that are starting to try to leverage around this and build business models around influencers. I don't want to get sort of too much into the details of that, but people sort of now understand it. I think film and television is quite a bit behind. It's quite a bit behind. I think Barbie did a really good job on social to great results, but also spent an absolute ton of marketing and PR. But I think that going into those interest groups and using social to sort of help as a marketing and a community tool. That's the thing.
The other clip that I selected for this roundup came from our chat with Sam Clough, who heads up Insights at Super Awesome. And we were talking about tweens and teens and ages and stages. It was a fascinating conversation. This particular clip, Sam and I discuss really that stage, I guess, where young people are beginning to figure out their place in the world, their identity. They're beginning to try on new personas and they're beginning to try new content, which is really interesting because they're trying content that might be a little bit old for them, a little bit mature, or strays into a topic that they may not know much about or maybe feel a little bit trepidatious about. And it's typified by this almost yo-yo action in young teendom, where children go and they watch something, but then periodically they want to retreat back to what's familiar and nostalgic, and to give them that security, perfectly understandable. And that could be in the form of family, it could be in the form of friends, or it could be in the form of content that reassures them. So we have this interesting dichotomy where there is a stage that young people are going out and watching things that might feel a little bit too mature, but then they do retreat back to what's familiar. And that's a really interesting way that they consume content, and something that we need to be mindful of. Here's Sam talking about it.
I also think it leans really quite well to talk about at this point, this nostalgia, pre-stalgia, I don't quite know how to call it, phase of watching content that either they loved as a child or that is completely not aimed at them. So take teenagers and Bluey, which is a really weird thing that's going on, you know, but there is this kind of, and I think, and I can't, I'm trying to work out in my head whether this is partly the kind of COVID generation growing up, and they've missed out on childhood, and they're kind of trying to hang on to it for as long as possible, or whether it's nostalgia as a coping mechanism. And we definitely saw that coming through in our research, that actually that they're, you know, at this age group, they're terrified of growing up and going back to things that they loved when they were kids is a way of, you know, coping with that, because it makes them feel warm and fuzzy. But there's a whole load of other things going on, and we're seeing this whole kid adulting thing going on in different spaces as well as the content space as well. So it's really interesting and very complicated.
I do wonder if maybe it's not so new, but because we can track it across media, we think it is. But I'm just thinking back to when I was that kind of age and stage, as we've spoken about. And you do get to that stage in kind of teen and tweendom where you want to push out, you want to be yourself, but then you get the fear because you're not sure if this is quite right. And then you retreat back to what's familiar. But we used to, you know, do it with magazines or dolls or kind of cuddly toys in our bedrooms. But now they tend to do it with media. Like you say, they go back and retreat to what's familiar, which makes it easier for it to track, for us to track it. But, you know, potentially, and it sounds very simplistic, and there are, as you've said, far more factors to it. But I do wonder if it's perhaps not something so new for this demographic of tween and teens that we've spoken about. But in terms of development, it's a time of almost yo-yoing out and back.
I think there's an element of truth in that. I think it's more pronounced at the moment, but possibly because it's more accessible. You know, for us to go back and look at what we loved beforehand would have been quite difficult. Whereas this lot can do whatever they like and access whatever they like when they want. But it's interesting because it does seem to be at particular comfort moments. And I think that ties into what you're saying, that, you know, if they're unwell, or if they're having a really bad time, or this kind of stuff, then again, it goes back to this investment piece, right? That actually they don't want to invest in anything new or scary because it might be, you know, it might not fit with their mood. But if they go back to watching Barbie Rapunzel and Barbie and the 10 Dancing Princesses again, then they know what they're getting. I mean, again, it's like, it's why they watch series over and over again.
We recently had on Sam Clough, Global Research Director of Super Awesome, to talk about teens. I've been chatting to Sam on and off for a number of years about the teen audience. She has such a great view of all audiences because of her research background, and teens in particular because she has a couple herself. And my favourite clip from that show was, it's actually quite early on in the show, and she just lays out the landscape of video consumption as it relates to teens. She talks about the platforms that are there, how they've changed in recent years, you know, how YouTube might have been fulfilling one need, you know, 5 years ago, but TikTok and Snap have kind of come up and are doing that need in a whole different, better way. YouTube still definitely has a place, and then where streaming sits alongside all this. In addition to that, she brought up this concept of teen investment and audience investment. And I know as content creators, we have a lot of conversations about investment, but it's not often from that audience point of view. And I think it's fascinating to hear that she is seeing audiences react to the amount of investment they feel they need to make in a platform, or the amount of investment they feel they need to make in a show. So this is my favorite tip. I think she's just great, and she really knows this audience back to front.
Our annual survey that looks at platform and device usage, and what's been really fascinating to look at is how that landscape is changing. And YouTube is you know, kind of the default, and everyone watches YouTube and goes to it, but the way in which they're using it is really different from how it used to be. And it used to be really exciting, and it used to be the place that they went to get, you know, to do a challenge or to get kind of some fresh stuff. Whereas what we're seeing now is that actually there's a kind of double threat on YouTube and then streaming as well, which is TikTok, and then in brackets, Reels and YouTube Shorts, and then gaming. And we've seen huge rises, even in the teen space, in things like Roblox and obviously Fortnite, and then TikTok as well, being the place where they go to, and they go to frequently. So they might be watching YouTube on a daily basis, but they're watching TikTok, like, you know, at many, many intervals across the day, and different kinds of content. And it has that kind of freshness and that challenge, and also that kind of easy viewing. I was talking earlier on with one of my teams, actually, about this idea of investment, and the investment that you have to make in a piece of content, and be it on a streaming platform or on a social platform. And we're seeing that coming through in our data, that actually there's a huge amount of risk involved in investing in new content for them, you know, because it's cancelled, or, you know, they don't know what it's going to be like, or it's just going to be some kind of boring rehash of you know, something that's happened already. And the social content is really easy. There's no risk involved. It's really snackable. It's really streamable. The other thing that I think is going on, and we're seeing in data as well, is this idea of, you know, almost like, and I'm sorry if this isn't where you want to go to, but this when you look at the streaming versus everything else that's out there, there's a sense of almost like boredom, like I've seen everything, or because everything's like a franchise or a remake, or there's nothing fresh coming through, or there's massive choice paralysis. You go onto your various platforms and you go, oh, I'm gonna watch, because there's just like too much out there. And I think that is like this perfect storm of like jeopardy for like long form content, actually.
We also had Simon Pullman on talking about various different things. That was kind of a great spin-off to the Sam Clough episode, Comfort TV, New to Me TV for younger audiences. And one thing we got in on, which is the kind of thing I like to geek out about, was the algorithm and content discovery on streaming. And Simon shared his thoughts on the top 10. We chewed it back and forth about what the problem is. And I do feel like there is a discovery crisis on streaming, particularly as it relates to shows that aren't prestige titles. So yeah, we threw some thoughts about, and Simon dropped some truth, as he always does.
So let's talk top 10 list then.
Well, I mean, it's just something I think about a lot, because when we entered the streaming age, it was all of the hype and all the discussion was about the algorithm, that it's going to know what you're going to want to watch. It's going to find these things that you really want to watch. But certainly speaking from personal experience, and I think this probably applies to a lot of people, when it's Saturday night and you're looking for a movie to watch on streaming, you're not going out, you want to sit in and watch something. Very occasionally there's something, you know, it's hitting, right? You know, it's coming out. Anyone but you is now on streaming. I'm going to watch that, or whatever it may be, Moana, or, you know, that's quite infrequent. More often, I think you're scanning between streaming services, trying to find something to watch, or maybe you Google. That top 10 list on Netflix, and I think Netflix does it better than anybody else because a lot of them bury it, has such a virtuous sort of circle effect to it. And this applies to a lot of the new to me content, because, you know, you might have a movie that came out in 2012 or 2006 or 2019, And yet, almost inexplicably, it's number one or number two on the list. And I think it's because the validating effect of popularity.
So thanks for tuning in to this special highlights edition of the Kids Media Club podcast. We hope you enjoyed revisiting some of the best moments and key takeaways from the last couple of episodes. Don't forget to subscribe and follow, and we'll see you on the next episode.